I want to welcome Agile XRM to the podcast. I've known the people at Agile XRM for the past 12 years. I've seen how their business process management tool can add massive value to complex organizational processes in sectors such as finance and government. If you have complex processes or a need for dialogues on the Power Platform or Dynamics 365, take a look at how this BPM tool can add value. You can find them at agilexrm.com or check out the show notes for more details. Welcome to the Power Platform Show. Thanks for joining me today. I hope today's guest inspires and educates you on the possibilities of the Microsoft Power Platform. Now, let's get on with the show. Today's guests from the United Kingdom. We're going to be discussing AI Copilot and AI orchestration, as well as some amazing stuff that they are doing in AI. They both work at ANS Group as Power Platform Configuration Consultants and Power Platform Consulting in general. John is a regular blogger where he talks about mental health, community, and his passion for the Power Platform. Mike is experienced in a variety of programming languages and technologies across low-code environments and has a good working experience with developing automation workflow solutions on the Power Platform. You can find links in the show notes for this episode to their bio, social media, etc., as well as if there's any resources, like I know they've got video content, etc., you can go take a look at. We'll put those in the show notes so that you can get a good understanding of the amazing stuff that they have done this year in this space. With that, John, Mike, welcome to the show.
Hi, Mark.
Hello.
Good to have you gentlemen on. Before, like always, I would like our audience to get to know you. So, John, start with you. Tell us a bit about food, family, and fun. What do they mean to you? What do you do when you're not working?
What do I do when I'm not working? It's a great question. So, family, I've got my lovely wife, Katie, who pretty much keeps me on the straight and narrow and, quite straight and narrow. And, looks after me in many, many, many different ways, really. And then I've got two daughters, Esme, who is 7, and Tilly, who is 5.
Fantastic.
Both quite different characters. Esme is my shadow, pretty much, and probably vice versa, although I don't like to admit it. And Tilly is, second child, and she's completely crackers.
Awesome. And what are you doing for fun?
Fun actually does probably involve a bit of the Power Platform. I mean, we'll get into it in a bit, but it's kind of how me and Mike kind of got stuck into the AI side of things. But I also love photography. Before COVID, I was kind of doing that as a bit of a side hustle, and it was going quite well. And then COVID hit, and it was a bit, It kind of all died. But yeah, that's my main things. And music as well. I used to DJ a lot a long time ago. Played like loads of different clubs in London, played in Ibiza. So music is a big thing for me as well. Yeah.
I love it. We're going to just dwell on this for a second. First of all, what's your hardware when it comes to photography?
So I have a Canon DSLR, 7D Mark II, with various lenses. But I've also, I hate to admit it, I've also got an iPhone 14, and the camera's probably better now on the phone than it is on the DSLR.
Isn't it crazy just how far the camera technology? I was up at 11 o'clock the other night because I have a robotic mower, and it had gone over a little embankment. No damage, but anyhow, I got notified on my app, and so I go out in my undies, to go sort it out. And the moon is out. It's just a beautiful, and I grab my, I've got the same phone, and I take a photo, and it's like a daylight photo, and it's 11 o'clock at night. The moon's out. Just the landscape looked just magic. The other thing then, DJ. So do you have like your own turntables and what are you set up with there?
I've now got like a, it's like a Neumark mixing deck that I plug into my Mac, and then I can actually stream through Tidal. So I can like play pretty much any music I want, which is pretty wicked. So like during lockdown, I used to do like kind of like garden sessions where I'd like have a barbecue in the back garden and also play some music at the same time. But yeah, I think my, I was just talking about this with my wife. I think my my DJing days maybe might be over. Mm-hmm. I've inquired about a New Year's Eve thing possibly, which is local. Mm-hmm. So we'll see what happens. But yeah, yeah.
And are you more the, you know, the 60s to today type music, or are you more EDM?
So yeah, back in like between 2005, 2010, 2011, very much predominantly house music, mm-hmm. Like kind of ran our own parties as well.
Nice.
But now I would say my taste is much more eclectic, and I quite like to dabble with different genres and see which songs kind of mix together quite nicely. And I'm always looking at that. Yeah, that's good. Yeah.
Mm. Yeah, very cool. Very cool. Mike, food, family, fun.
Oh, John's really showing me up because he's so interesting that I'm not.
Come
I've
on.
Got, got my wife, Jess. We've been married for about a year and a half now.
Nice.
We were originally going to get married in 2020, but that didn't happen thanks to COVID. Mm-hmm. Then it was going to be 2021. That didn't happen. So got to 2022. Finally, it did happen. Was quite stressful, but in the grand scheme of things, like, it wasn't actually too bad. But in that time before we got married, we ended up having our first child. So we've got Jack. He's 2.5. I think he's determined to injure himself in any way he can at the moment.
Yep.
He's discovered climbing. He discovered jumping. Yeah, he just he's a bit of a handful at the moment, but he's great. What do I do for fun? I mean, I'm just really into tech, you know. So like my idea of fun is actually like literally sitting down just in my own thoughts, playing about with coding, new bit of tech, really got into AI. Like John just went down that rabbit hole very recently, and that's sort of what brought me and John closer together than we already are, because I think we are basically brothers at this point. So yeah, yeah.
That's, fun fact about the wedding venue, Mike. Yeah. You can tell that one.
Yeah, yeah. So we don't live near each other at all, me and John. John probably lives about 2 hours away from me, but we both got married at the same wedding venue.
Wow.
Obviously a few years apart, before we knew each other, right? So no idea. And that wedding venue is sort of like, I guess it's like in between where we both live as well.
That's incredible.
Yeah. And, we also we have very similar looking cats as well, don't we? And we're convinced they're brothers.
Yep. Yeah.
Crazy.
The fact mine just eats everything. And it's not fun having an obese cat. It's just not fun. It seems like it's fun on the internet when you see them on.
Yeah.
They're not fun at all. Nothing is safe from that cat eating it, you know.
That's crazy. I've got two cats, but they're very skinny, as in because we live in a rural area, and I don't like to feed them too much because they've got to do their job and keep the mice away. So they've got to go earn a bit of their food as well. Interesting you say about wedding venues like that. What surprised me in the UK is how much rigor there is around the legal part of getting married. Like from the venue having a sign on it that says this venue is allowed to be used for a marriage ceremony. And then before the wedding, like I was there for my brother-in-law's wedding and, you know, getting on the hip flask and, you know, but we couldn't get too fucked up because the person that came along like has to make sure that everybody's sober enough to make their vows, that they're not doing it in an intoxicated state, because that's a breach of, I was quite surprised. Yep. I hadn't come across
also,
that.
Yeah, your wedding venue also, where you actually get married, has to be under a roof as well. So if you have an outdoor wedding, it has to be under some sort of like pergola or like a little arch. It has to be underneath, unless you're doing like vow renewal or anything like that, where it's not like through the registry. Yeah.
I got married at night. And so we're talking about 10, 11 o'clock at night. And my mother was like, is this even legal? Are you allowed to do it? And, you know. Because there was such a, like, I'd never ever been to a night wedding before. And it's something that my wife and I, where we chose a venue, was on a cliff top looking out over the ocean. And we knew that it was going to be a full moon. So as long as no clouds were there, and it was just like that, no clouds, full moon, reflection right across the water behind us. It was, absolutely amazing. But I was surprised, you know, that the older generation, once again, didn't think it was illegal because it wasn't done in daylight, where that's every wedding they'd ever been to their entire life. Okay, let's talk about what you guys have been up to. And I find the subject so interesting in the area of AI. And that is because, you know, we've just had the birthday of ChatGPT. It's only 1 year old, as of, I think, a week and a half, maybe 2 weeks ago. And so much has changed. And, of course, added to this change is where we all work with Microsoft technology, is we've heard so much about co-pilots. And, of course, if you've been in the Microsoft ecosystem more than 5 minutes, you know that there's marketing and then there's reality. And there's V1 of products and then there's, you know, battle-hardened, tried and tested 3-4-year-old technology, and, you know, it works. And what I find interesting is that you guys have come up with some very practical use cases and built something out, and we'll unpack that in a second. And one of the questions I get so much is, I don't know where to start with AI. I don't know. Here's another one. In fact, this was on a call literally 5 minutes ago that I was on with somebody else in the UK, which is, I'd never pay for it. I don't see the value of it. And, you know, I bit my tongue because for me, I've paid for ChatGPT from the day it was purchasable. So when it was $40 US a month, not the 20 it is now. And, you know, I challenge myself every day to do a minimum of 5 prompts. And that is from, you know, using Midjourney, which I'm about to move away from. I'm going to go to Stable Diffusion's tools in the space, to ChatGPT, its evolution and the changes I've just seen in the past year, and the ability to pre-prompt it, like, so it knows a whole bunch of stuff about me before I even get into whatever my prompt is. And I've bought a bunch of other third-party tools, you know, that build out personas. Because I'm always looking for, you know, how can I become more efficient? And the last thing I will say on this, when I was living in London, and my, this is 2018, and I really dedicated 2018 to studying, researching 5 technologies. Power Platform was one of them, but AI was one of them back then, right? Before all the craze. And one of the things I really liked about Microsoft is that they always took a view of the world around what they call practical AI. You know, where Google is like, oh, we've got the chess master of AI, we've got the you know, Go, and it can beat everything. And actually, I've been in the offices in Paddington of DeepMind, because my wife used to work for Google back then. So I saw all this kind of abstract AI, and then I saw Microsoft with this kind of, you know, and you know, with their Azure cognitive service type products around this practical application. And then that brings us to today. So tell us, what are you guys built? What is Just Ask It? And what was the, how did you get to Just Ask It? What was that journey to that point? And then let's unpack what Just Ask It is.
Yeah. So I'll probably take the first bit. So it started off with one of the solution architects on our team asking for me to create a lab in Dataverse for domain-specific client. Mm-hmm. So I know there's various people on our team. We have various different domain knowledge experience. I'm kind of more on the HR payroll side, expenses, mm-hmm. invoices side, that kind of thing. And I kind of understand that process. But the client that came to us, asking for that was a water company. Mm-hmm. And this was like Friday. It was like Friday, like 4:30 on a Friday. So he came, this solution architect asked me, you know, could you think of a domain specific example for a water utility company to build something in Dataverse? And that's basically the information that I had. And I'd kind of been tinkering around a little bit with AI, kind of most of that day, I think. And I kind of thought, well, maybe I could use this to try and come up with an idea that is domain specific. So that's when I kind of thought of the idea of giving it a prompt, telling the AI system that it is a Power Platform consultant, specializes mm-hmm. in Dataverse, specializes in entity relationship diagrams, and its purpose would be to take a domain specific example and then come up with a dataverse schema, including tables, columns, relationships, and potentially an entity relationship diagram. But that kind of came second. And one of the coolest things about it really was, and this is when me and Mike started talking about it, is that I was playing around with getting the it was basically a Power Automate Cloud Flow that was getting triggered by a certain text inside a Teams channel. And the response came back, and it was just one paragraph of, you know, of text. And I thought, oh no, it looks horrible. Like, I need to kind of format that. So I started looking in Power Automate, and I was like, right, you know, maybe I could like format it as a table and all this kind of stuff. I spoke to Mike, and Mike goes, just ask it, add another rule, put the response in HTML format. Nice. And that was quite a game changing moment for me, because I realized actually, yeah, you can just ask it to do stuff. Obviously, there are implications with that, which we'll probably come on to in more detail, especially after a chat I had with someone today. But yeah, that's kind of where we got to. And then it kind of started evolving into a model driven app. But I think the key to all of this really is that, being a consultant, I'm, you know, I have the technical knowledge around Dataverse and relationships and entity relationship diagrams, but I don't necessarily have the domain specific knowledge that the client needs.
Correct.
So, you know, you could be I've already demoed this to our pre-sales guys, and I've said, you know, maybe you're on a call with a beer
sales
making
with
company.
The horseshoes. Mm.
And you don't know that domain, do you? Right. So, and they might say to you, well, tell us what the benefits of using Dataverse are. They can use that prompt. They can use just ask it, put that in, and, you know, a minute later they've got the Dataverse schema and they can explain that to the client. So it's really a kind of starting point and a talking point for that initial conversation to build rapport with the client and build trust with the client, and then you expand on that, etc. And then the entity relationship diagram stuff kind of happened more on Mike's side. So, Mike, if you want to talk about that bit,
yeah. So it was sort of like following from the conversation I had with John about actually, you know, just ask it to format it in HTML; that will do it for you. At the time, I was sort of going on my own little journey with AI. I was actually looking more. This is before Copilot Studio was generally available. And I was looking at actually, you know, can I get it to just give me some JSON and tell it what the JSON should be? And actually, if I give it some context of what I could ask it, it could define a process, and then that process could be converted into a JSON array of these different objects and parameters. And then could I actually just iterate through that array in Power Automate and say, you know what, this is going to trigger a child flow that does this particular action, and these are the parameters in a string format. Just split that string up when the flow starts, and then take that, ingest that all in, do the action, and then rinse and repeat. I was kind of like, I was talking to Chris Huntingford about it at the time. I was like, this is basically just a Copilot, right? But I'm just probably going about it a long way, and we've got Copilot Studio coming out. When John was showing me Just Ask It, which I can't even remember what the name of it was originally, we were looking at entity relationship.
It didn't really have a name, I don't think.
Just Model Driven App 1, wasn't it?
Yeah.
And we were thinking about how can we actually display that schema, because at the time it was just like a long text, wasn't it? These are the tables, these are the columns, these are the data types. And they already knew about Mermaid.js. It's like a markup ish language that allows you to build things like flowcharts, swim lanes, entity relationship diagrams, that sort of thing. And I was awesome. Like, I wonder if we can just get it to give us that Mermaid schema of that table, or all those tables, and like map the relationships out that way. So we got it. We just asked it, and it did it. So we just fire off a second prompt once we get the first one, because there's a flag in the way the flow works. It says if it's going to generate an entity relationship diagram, do the second prompt and ask it, say, this is a schema. Can you convert this into a Mermaid.js diagram, or the text for a Mermaid.js diagram? We save that into an attribute in the table, and then we actually just do some customization on the model-driven app form, with some JavaScript, just using the Mermaid.js library and literally just converting that schema into a SVG graphic. And then that's what we display to the end user.
And that was a proper wow moment, really, because I remember Mike had been kind of, we kind of like got stuck into this on like a Friday evening, and then we kind of worked on it together Saturday and the Sunday. And then I think it was like the Sunday night, Mike's like, oh yeah, you need to come and have a look at this. Come and have a look at this entity, you know, how it's creating the entity relationship diagram. And even for me, I don't think
our wives were too happy, were they?
No, they weren't happy. But it was like, it was a wow moment. And the last time I got a wow moment was watching The Prestige. It was a great film. And I was like, I was really blown away by that. And I was like, you know, because that's the thing about with AI, and that's why Copilot is successful, is because it's kind of, and I hate to use this term because it's a bit of an Elon Musk term, but it's going back to first principles. And first principles are being able to have a conversation with someone and getting what you need from natural language. And that's the power with this. And yeah, like you said earlier on, you know, it's only the very start of what I think is going to happen. You know, there's that whole stuff to do with Project Sophia, which was like really under the radar at Ignite, but actually probably one of the more important parts. And all of that, I think we're only really touching the very surface of what is potentially coming. Yeah.
Just on the Project Sophia side of things, do you want to explain what you understand that is? Just because there'd be a bunch of people that won't be aware.
I mean, I don't know a lot about it, but as I could understand it, it's kind of like a layer above Fabric that you can basically talk to and interrogate data and get it to display charts and visuals, etc. Basically like Power BI on acid, really, with a bit of natural language programming.
I've seen it described.
It's interesting.
I've seen it described as I've lost what I was going to say. I've seen it described as like a business application built with AI first, rather than being like, like what we've built, which is a business application with a layer of AI on top. It's actually like baked into the entire product.
I just saw a demo recently of a competing product, and it literally built the UI based on the domain that was being discussed with the AI, as well as the context of the person, etc. So in other words, it might have started off as a chatbot conversation, but the interface morphed into like a layout grid of content that could then be, as you drilled through it, like a web interface, but then it continued to evolve based on how the discussion was changing to present the information in the most consumable format for the person engaged with it. And I saw this in the context of, you know, being aware of Project Sophia, and I'm like, you know, the concept of app automation, chatbots, Power Pages, you know, the tooling that we have in the Power Platform, you know, what will they be in 5 years? Will every interface be actually dynamically constructed? And you imagine an interface that was dynamically constructed to present the data in the most optimal format based on whether I had any, you know, visual impairment, hearing impairment, tactile, etc. But in context of the data I was interrogating, you know, and, you know, I often see this in even an app design, like, is a drop down or a multi-select list the best way to represent a billion records? Probably not, right? No. Is that when you're trying to filter or whatever? But it's going to be interesting to see how these interfaces literally become liquid in their ability to evolve and engage.
So talking about interfaces. So there's a guy on our team, Reese Murphy, who has basically helped us start using an application called Lucid, and we use that for a Sprint Zero engagement where. We will have three or four sessions with the client, couple of hours each, talking about, you know, the risks and the problems that they're facing, the personas that are going to be using the application, their user journey, etc. So I started looking into Lucid's API to see whether mm-hmm. or not you can create those diagrams mm-hmm. automatically, which you can do. So that then got me to think about, well, hold on a second. We're having a conversation with the client, i.e. from the mm-hmm. horse's mouth, other animals are available. Mm-hmm. That transcript is being we're recording that on Teams. The transcript is being recorded. Plug that into a large language model. Then with Mike's help, orchestrate that to create the Lucid board. I mean, mm-hmm. I think there are ways, and I don't know how far we are away from it, but I think there are ways to go literally from a conversation to kind of proof of concept with a yeah. large language model. I think that's possible.
Yeah.
I think that is possible.
This is amazing. So just ask it, is it up on GitHub?
Not yet. No, that's something we need to really get our asses in gear and sort out, don't we, John? We keep talking about it, but I'm just wondering,
you know, is that if you can get other people in the community with specialist skill sets start contributing to this,
yeah.
what, like, this could be, you know, dare I say it, this could be the future of the XRM toolbox, right? This could be a whole new way of thinking yeah. around, you know, the XRM toolbox was built in a time where it was only dynamics, mm. right? And it's been an amazing tooling. But like what you're describing here, it's a phenomenal game changer, because if I look across my career and I remember I went to Hong Kong some years ago and I had to pitch to the, I think it was the seventh largest shipping company in the world, a concept to manage all their ships around the world, all their ports of call, all the scheduling, that type of thing. And guess what I knew about shipping? I know ships go on water, right?
Yeah.
Cargo maybe, right? I knew nothing. And so what did I do? Back then it was I jump on Google, I search and go, okay, you know, and I literally got on a whiteboard and said shipping company, and I did really a mind map of all the kind of things. They obviously have ports. Weather plays a part in what they do. They have shipping containers. They have different ships which have different sizing. They have crew. And I just went, and that's how I would mind map out, right, a concept. I'd chuck it into Visio back then, and that would be the start of my ERD, right? And then I would take any one of those nodes, and I would build out everything I could. Now, go pitch to the customer. I'm not even showing an interface design or anything. I'm just showing this is how I understand it. And they're straight away like, wow, and you can do this on your software. And this was, of course, Dynamics back in those days. Fast forward, Hong Kong Jockey Club. Deal with thoroughbred racing horses, right? And gambling and breeding, and same deal, right? I take a horse at the center, they're gonna have vet, they're gonna have health, they're gonna have jockeys. And I would do these diagrams out and stuff, and the customer would go, wow, you totally understand us, right? And I knew nothing about racehorses a day before, type thing. And then you tell me about this tool, and I'm just like going, oh my gosh. This is a game changer, right? Because it allows you to go out, I assume, and you know, does it allow you to go down to, you talk about a domain level like water utilities, but could it go even more specific to the exact water utility and interrogate their web asset, maybe their director's reports, maybe any kind of filings that they've had to do from a compliance? Could it feed that into the mix around, you know, you're saying having those conversations with pre-sales and things?
I think that is that's the area where it's a bit of a bone of contention, because it's their data, right? It's their proprietary data.
In the public domain?
In the public domain, that's different. That's different, yeah. But if it's their
I'm talking about okay. public domain. So I'll give you an example. The other day, I had a customer in Australia, a government agency that had I won't say their name, but they had what's called a royal inquiry into them. In other words, they had been doing some things not too good with public money, right? Now, all I did was I handed their website to AI and I said, tell me the top five issues that this organization is facing. And of course, it basically read that, you know, our Royal Commission report. And it came out and it said, they have been told they have to address this, this, and this. And so when I jump on the call, I don't say I've done any of that, right? I'm just like, So what are you doing in this area? And what are you doing in that area? Like, I'm asking these questions, which I know a lot of the answers to, but of course they go, oh my gosh, you've really thought about us. You've really understood where we're doing. And then I ultimately had my team model that into a solution around stakeholder relationship management. And they're like, wow, this is exactly what we're looking for. And I'm like, yeah, it didn't exist a week ago, but
so like it comes back to this thing where you only know what you know, right? And so one of my major things with all of this, and it's definitely an imposter syndrome thing, I think the thing that we've built, and no offense, it's not hard. It is. I feel like it's not difficult. I think the issue is, the main thing is, and like you said earlier on, Mark, about, you know, having this solution on GitHub, actually the hard work is about the grounding of the large language model and coming up with a consensus that this is how we ground all models when we are using it for a certain application, whether that's consulting or whether that's in childcare or whether that's in a doctor's surgery or anything like that. That's the difficult part. And that's where a conversation I had today, we were talking about diversity and equality and inclusion. And, you know, you have the large language model doesn't know that. So you have to kind of baseline it and ground it with these prompts where you're telling it what diversity is. You're telling it what, you know, race, ethnicity, you know, people who have different kind of impairments, etc. You know, all of that needs to be factored in. And I think that is where the work needs to be done.
But is that a challenge only of December 2023?
No.
And what I'm meaning is that, let's say we fast forward 1 year from today, and therefore we're on GPT-5, let's say, as one of the most predominant language models out there. I think that we will get to the point where things like inclusion and diversity is AI will define it based on everything it's consumed around these scenarios, and it would potentially write a better model, a more bias removed, etc., than what any human, because it'll understand what bias looks like, because it'll understand what racism looks like. And therefore it will, if you like, create a self-healing process around that to make sure it doesn't creep in. You know, like, you know, you've seen the sample around where CVs are read and they're like, how come we only employ males in the organization? Because historically, all the CV data you've given it have been male-centric CVs. And it would go, hang on a second, I understand how the bias has crept in. Now I'm going to put countermeasures in place against such bias.
I mean, one thing to note is that prompt engineering is an iterative process, isn't it? It's not a one-time thing like I've written the perfect prompt, I can now leave it alone. It's something you have to go back and review, and that's something we're actually looking at putting in to just make it, aren't we, John, where we actually can have feedback on prompts and actually give feedback, and that can help a prompt engineer to then reiterate what that prompt actually does. The rules, the grounding.
It's interesting you say that, because what I've noticed in Midjourney is Midjourney's versions have changed. Mm. You can take a prompt that you used 9 months ago and just word for word put that prompt in, and the output is just light and day difference, right?
Yeah.
And so you're so right. A prompt that might have worked 6 weeks ago, if the models have been updated, might not be as relevant or accurate today.
And also, with AI, it's never the same answer twice, is it? If you start to introduce things like, in OpenAI's case, temperature, nuclear sampling, like, you don't get the same answer every single time, and anybody who's used ChatGPT will know that if you ask, like, how to make an omelette, you might actually get a few different recipes if you ask it over and over again. So actually, prompt engineering isn't just about when the model updates, it's also, you know, as the model is in its current state, you might need to review that prompt over and over again.
John, if we go back to what you were saying there about the grounding discussion and your feeling around Git, how are you proposing to address that?
So I think something that's come to light today really is, so at ANS, we have a lot of EDI groups. We have the Squirrel Club, which is for people.
What does EDI stand for? I don't know.
Equality, Diversity and Inclusion.
So, I've not heard that before.
We have the Squirrel Group, which is for people who are neurospicy, neurodiverse. We have the Parent and Child Group. We have the Mental Health First Aiders Group, which I lead. Various different groups. And today, Mike showed us on a demo, like a kind of prompt catalogue. And we were talking about that, and we realized that Mike had kind of split that out by department. So maybe you might have slightly different rule set for people who are in the IT department, people who are in HR. And actually it's bigger than that.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
It's not really department based. It's domain specific based. And so what we've been thinking is, and I said this today on our, we had an EDI meeting this afternoon with like the lead in our people team. And I was talking about this and I said, actually what we need to do is we need to involve all of these groups to provide the grounding rules to the large language model. So there's a big shift, I think, now from people who might not think they are necessarily tech savvy. We don't actually need those people that are tech savvy because we've kind of worked that bit out. We now need the domain specific expertise that me and Mike might not have, or other people might not have that are tech based. We would like to speak to someone who knows more about dyslexia, for example. You know, what rules do you want to put into the model to ground it, which would improve the response for someone who is dyslexic? That kind of thing. That's kind of where we are with that, and I think that's going to be very powerful. I also think there is some, not so much at the moment, but you know, we know how technology goes. We know that, you know, Moore's law of, you know, capacitors and transistors getting smaller and smaller and smaller, which means a smaller chip with more data inside it, or more data it can handle. I think there will come a point where we will be able to build our own large language model. Now, I don't think I don't think that's close. I don't think that's near because of the cost of it. And there's lots of other considerations. But I think that is going to be where the gold is. You know, you could have a consultancy speaking to a client that wants to use AI. They're a little bit protective about their data. Fair enough, PII data, whatever. Let's help you spin up your own large language model, trained on your proprietary data and secured inside the Microsoft ecosystem within your region. That's gold level, I think. And I don't think it's close because of, you know, the GPU issues that you're going to have with, you know, you've only got like ARM and NVIDIA maybe that are producing those, and the kind of sustainability aspects about, you know, how much it actually costs to run an AI data center, for example. But I think in a couple of years' time, maybe that's where it's going to go. I think that's where it's going to go.
So the CEO of Stable Diffusion, right? He's UK based. I don't know if you've looked at any of the stuff. I saw a presentation he did 3 months ago, and he said within 12 months, so therefore 2024, that everybody will have a large language model on the iOS platform.
Wow.
In other words, the latest version of an LLM will be able to condense to under 2 gigs in size, and everybody will have a personal LLM on their device that you then control all your private data against. And he saw some kind of concept of you would have kind of like an API into that, but you would control anybody, as in what you would give out of your personal LLM on your device. And so therefore the whole, you know, advertisers, etc., wouldn't be able to get that. And that's why I think, my guess is, Apple is working on something that's going to, because they've been very quiet about AI, right?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, they're super quiet, yeah.
They are probably, it wouldn't surprise me, put it that way, if they all of a sudden came out and said, listen, we've got our hardware, et cetera, in whatever version of phone, you know, in the next period that comes out, now can run that full kind of GPU type capacity, but yeah, on your own device. And therefore, you know, I've been storing for over 10 years all my email, all my receipts. I've got gigs of stuff, photos and my electronic footprint, waiting for this day that I am going to be able to go whoosh, have it all, but not owned by anybody out in the public, you know, arena that's going to make money off that, and go, let's talk and let's understand Mark as a digital version of me that understands, you know, that 15 years ago I went to a doctor and I had this medical treatment, and now I've got a medical file that's my medical file of stuff that I've totally forgotten about. You know, what was my last eye check at? What was, you know, when I went to my, you know, get my x-rays from the dentist? That's fitted in there. And now I've got this model of me and stuff around me that I've collected over my life. And it operates on a LLM that's mine, personal LLM. So I think you're right. I think that is going to be, I don't know if it's going to be 2 years away. I think it might be less.
Yeah, I just wanted to say what you said about Apple there being quiet. I kind of respect them that they have been, because what's really pissed me off this week, especially because I'm trying to think about AI in an ethical way, and you know, the whole Triple H thing, honest, yeah, not harmful, and what was the last one? Honest, not harmful, and can't remember what the other one is.
Harmless, honest,
no hallucination.
No, yeah. But Google, like the stuff that Google put out, right? I'm sorry. Like as soon as I saw I was like, this is too good to be true. And then there was that TechCrunch article where they said that it's fake. Yes. Google tried to get them to take fake out, and actually, no, it's not. And just stuff like that just really annoys me, because you've got like people who are quite skeptical about AI.
So wrong.
Yeah, you've got people who are really skeptical about AI and don't want to use it, think it's going to take over everything. And then you have a company like Google who are, you know, top three companies in the world, and it's bullshit. It's wrong. It's really wrong.
Totally. And you know, when I first saw those videos that they had produced, I was like, in fact, what happened is that I listened to a podcast called The All In Podcast, and I think it's four billionaires that, you know, chat about stuff. And they were like, this is the OpenAI killer. And they had the link to that video. And then I'm like, okay, so that's an unresearched knee-jerk flick, because, of course, that TechCrunch article, the whole quite clearly that it's a concept. It wasn't, but it was not pitched as a concept, right? It was pitched as...
No.
This is where we are with Gemini right now.
I mean, it was basically clickbait, really. That's what it was.
Yeah.
It was clickbait, pure and simple. That's what it was.
100%. Yeah. And it was interesting. It was done on the birthday of ChatGPT, right? As in, or within that week. And it was kind of like, you're obviously getting the limelight. And yeah, it's a bit frustrating. You're exactly right, because of the distrust that then creates the less than honest look of the world. Guys, this is one of the longer podcasts I have done, having the two of you on. We're at 45 plus minutes in. Any resources that people can look at, go see, and any final words that you want to add before we close out?
So I did do a blog post. It was a few weeks ago now, about writing your first prompt and doing it at Power Platform. Which actually goes into how to set up a OpenAI developer account, how to get your key token, use a connector, build it into a Canvas app. I do need to follow that up and do it with a Power Automate Flow as well. It's a good, if you've not got into it yet, it's a way to sort of like just go step by step, understand how to write a prompt, like what you need to include in it, how to actually interface that with Power Platform, specifically Canvas apps in this case, but it's a connector that also works over Power Automate. It's a, it, it's just like a, I guess like a little like starter really to get into it and understand mm-hmm. what the parameters do. It's generally like it's maybe like a good starting point. And we've also got nice. Our video Epic AI solution where you can actually see just ask it in action.
And nice. GitHub coming soon.
GitHub coming soon. Awesome. Yes.
Awesome. I'll get you guys to flick me those links. Just one question I have, actually. You highlighted that getting the OpenAI, the key for Azure OpenAI service. Is the 4 model, the OpenAI version 4 model in there, or is it just still 3.5?
In Azure OpenAI, they've got GPT-4.
They have?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah.
I just couldn't remember if I'd seen that.
Yeah, it's GPT-4 1106, and that's something that's something I like kind of learned as well. Is that 1106 is the day and month that model came out? So 6th of November, which was the OpenAI Dev Day when they released GPT-4.
Yeah,
gotcha. Yep. Fantastic.
Yeah.
Well, gentlemen, it's been fantastic to have you on. I would love to repeat this in 12 months' time.
Yeah.
And just see where things are. I think, you know, it'd be awesome to see this on GitHub. I'd love to learn more about it. But thank you for sharing your story.
Yeah, thanks for having us, Mark.
Thanks for your time, Mark.
Hey, thanks for listening. I'm your host, Business Application MVP Mark Smith, otherwise known as the NZ365 Guy. If there's a guest you'd like to see on the show, please message me on LinkedIn. If you want to be a supporter of the show, please check out buymeacoffee.com/NZ365 Guy. Stay safe out there and shoot for the stars.